For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
It's October 27th, and we are in Pasha Shlach. We're on page 802, and we're up to Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31. This is when the spies are responding to Kalev, who tried to quiet them. And now they're going to they respond with their evil report. If you recall, last time we talked about how Kalev forced them to be direct and not to beat around the bush. They were trying to have the Jews themselves arrive at the conclusion that it was dangerous to go into the land, but then Kalev forces their hand. So now they say their direct evil report, and it's three psukim, Laman al verse 31. V'ha'an nashim asher alu imo amru, and the men who came up with him with Kalev said, lo nuchala alos al ha'am, we cannot go up to the nation, ki chazak hu mimenu, for they are stronger than we are. Vayotziu dibas haaretz hashatur taru osa, and they brought forth the evil report of the land that they spied. El Bnei Yisrael, to the Jews, Lamar saying, haaretz hasher avarnu va, the land that we passed through it, losur osa, to spy it, eretz ocheles yoshveha hi, it's a land that consumes its inhabitants. V'chol ha'am asher ra'inu b'socha, and all of the nation that we saw in it, Anshei Midos, are men of measure. V'sham ra'inu es ha'nifilim, and there we saw the Nifilim, which we'll translate presently, B'nei Anak, Mina Nifilim, the sons of the giants from the Nifilim. So we saw the Nifilim, and we saw the sons of the giants who are from the Nifilim. V'anihi ve'eninu kacha gavim, and we were in our own eyes like grasshoppers. V'cheno yinu ve'enehem, and so we were in their eyes. The Pasuk says in Lamed Aleph 31 that they said, we cannot go up to the nation, ki chazak hu mimenu, for they are stronger than we are. Now the word mimenu has two meanings, and this is a grammatical issue, that mimenu, they are stronger than we are, so that's talking about that mimenu is a plural term than we are, and it is in first person. It's about us. They are stronger than we are. However, mimenu can also mean, can also be in the singular third person. It's the same word. The same word that we use in this tense and in this conjugation that is used for first person plural is used in third person singular. So that means mimenu can also be translated as they are stronger than he is, rather than we are stronger than he is.
Who is he? Hashem.
Who is he? Hashem. So that they would be saying a terrible thing. They would be saying a clear act of heresy. Yeah. They'd be saying that the people there are stronger than Hashem. Hashem cannot get them out of there. He's unable to remove them from the land. As Rashi says in the name of Chazal, he says it very poetically, Kiviyachol, so to say, as if to say, that he's unable, Rashi doesn't say it in this way over here, but that he's unable to remove his own utensils from the land. And it's the people, he put them there, he can't take them out. So that would be an incredible act of kfira, of heresy. Then it says that Pasuk Lamed verse 32, that they spoke of the Dibas Haaretz. The Dibas Haaretz is the evil report of the land. They spoke, this is the Lashon Hara that they said. So they said, the land that we spied out, the land that we passed through, that we spied out, it's a land that consumes its inhabitants. Now, the reason they said this is because wherever they went, they saw funerals. They saw many people being buried, people who had died and being buried. The reason Hashem did this, why he had a sudden increase in the death rate among the people in Eretz Yisrael, was in order to distract the people who lived in Eretz Yisrael so that they would not pay attention to these Jews who were spying out the land. Even though they noticed them, but they ignored them because they were too busy with their own grief and their own sorrow and their own issues of having to bury their dead. But the spies interpreted it as that it's a dangerous land. It consumes its inhabitants. People die. It's not a land that promotes life. It's a land that promotes death. And they reported this to the Jewish people. And then they said that all of the nation that we saw there were men of measure. Men of measure means that you have to come up with new measurements to describe them. Meaning that if you're walking on the street and you see a person who's 6'10", so you come in and you say, I saw a really tall person. I saw a really tall person. I never seen a person that tall before. Okay. But if you're walking in the street and you see a person who is 15 feet tall, then saying I saw a really tall person doesn't cut it. That doesn't describe it. Saying you saw a really tall person, I can conjure in my mind, you saw someone who is over 6 feet, six and a half feet tall. That you said words that register with me. But if the person was 15 feet tall, saying that he is, you saw a tall person, or even a very tall person, or even the tallest person you've ever seen, would not capture the image for the person you're describing it to. So that's what it means, they were men of measure, that new measurements have to be invented to describe them. I saw a person as tall as...
pine tree.
Right. Something like that. You have to come up with new ways of describing the sizes of these people. So that's what it means, they were men of measure. So that's another discouraging point that they made. And finally, and this is going to be the key to the entire discussion, and there we saw, in Pasuk Lamed Gimel verse 33, and there we saw the Nephilim. We'll discuss that in a minute. The sons of the giants from the Nephilim. So we get that they saw giants, or at least sons of giants, and these giants are from the Nephilim. So we have to talk about what these Nephilim are. And we were in their eyes like grasshoppers, and so were we in our own eyes. So clearly they are describing the people who are very, very large, to the point where these regular sized human beings appeared to be as small as grasshoppers, which means you're no longer talking about 15 feet tall, you're talking about hundreds of feet tall. If you're saying that a regular human being looks like a grasshopper, that means that you're talking about real huge, huge, huge people that would perceive the spies as grasshoppers. And they end by saying, and so were we in our own eyes. It wasn't just that they saw us as grasshoppers, but we felt confident that we could defeat them anyway. No, we also perceived ourselves in that way. They completely intimidated us. We don't think this is possible. We can't possibly get into Eretz Yisrael. So that is their report. This is going to trigger all of the bad things that are going to happen because of the miraglim, because of the spies, beginning with the crying of Tisha B'Av and the wandering in the desert, etc. It's all the bad things are going to spiral downward from here.
When you said the Mimenu could be stronger than him, Hashem, Could it be have been Moshe that they were talking? Because they were just talking with Moshe.
Yes, in theory you could say that, but the Gemara says they meant Hashem. So we then have to now handle the question, which we've said the past several times we've learned, that we're going to have to get to, which is, what is the spies' motivation? Where are they coming from? What are they thinking? The spies did not start off as bad people. They were chosen because they were men of leadership, and they were good people, and they were capable people. So their description here, they went to Eretz Yisrael and they came back with this terrible report. So something happened. Either something happened while they were there, or something happened before they went. But they came back with this horrible report. To say that, to make this statement that Hashem is incapable of defeating these people, so we can't take that at face value, because none of us would have said that. And to suggest that we are much better than the spies were is difficult to say, because they weren't evil people, at least not to begin with. They ended up as Rishayim, they ended up as evil people, but they didn't start that way. So how are they able to say Hashem can't remove these people from the land? Number one. Number two, let's say they are terribly evil people and they really do believe that Hashem is weak and is unable to remove the people from the land. That's not a very strong argument to make to the Jewish people. If they're trying to convince the Jewish people that this is hopeless, so if someone would come in here and tell you, oh, it's dangerous, there's this problem, there's this problem, there's this problem, so that might throw you off. It might get you to start thinking, well, maybe it's not possible. But if someone would come in and tell you, you know what, Hashem can't do it, you would just reject that out of hand. That's not very convincing. I mean, Hashem can't do it. Hashem can do anything he wants. So there's got to be some depth to this point that they're making, that Hashem can't do it. It's got to be a little bit more than just saying, you know what, Hashem just can't do it. There's got to be something there that actually captures the Jews' attention. And what that is going to be the key to understanding what's happening with the Meraglim. Let us begin with figuring out what this Nephilim, what are these Nephilim? Who are they? And what are they doing here? Now, it happens to be that a discussion of the Nephilim is a discussion of the end of Parshas Bereishis and the beginning of Parshas Noach, which is exactly where we are right now. That is, we'll put it in quotations, that is coincidental. But it is precisely where we are in the Parsha of the week, and that is absolutely necessary to understand what is going on here in Parsha Sof. So I'm going to ask you to hold the place. It'll be a little while until we get back to it on page 802. We're going to go back to the end of Parsha's Bereishis, which we just read yesterday. Page 26. I'm going to start reading from the beginning of Perek Vav, chapter 6, even though the main thing we want is a little bit further in, but we'll read from the beginning just to get a sense of what's going on over here. So, Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Vayhi ki hechel ha'adam l'rov al pnei ha'adama, and it was when man began to increase on the face of the earth. Uvanos yuladu lahem, and they had daughters. Vayiru v'nei ho'elohim es benos ha'adam ki tovos heina. And the b'nei ho'elohim, which the Targum Onkelos says means the powerful people, the men who were powerful. They translate it here as?
Rulers.
Rulers, okay. The people of power, they saw the daughters of man, ki tovos heina, that they were, literally tovos means good, but here the context, it means beautiful. They took for themselves wives from all that they chose. They did not pay attention to whether these women were already married, whether these women were related to them. It was irrelevant. They took whoever they wanted. Lo yadon ruchi ba'adam le'olam, my spirit will not okay, it means he's not going to fight with himself about man forever. Meaning he's not going to waffle back and forth whether or not to destroy man forever. Bishagam hu basar, in that he is only flesh and blood, and this is the way he's behaving. And still, even though he's only flesh and blood and he's vulnerable, he's still behaving this way. V'ayu yamav me'av esrim shana, I will give him 120 years to do teshuvah. I'll give them 120 years. This is said 120 years before the Mabul, before the flood. Hashem says, I'm going to give them that much time to do teshuvah, and if they don't do teshuvah, then they will be destroyed. Hanifilim hayu v'aretz bayamim ha'hem. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days. This is the first reference to the Nephilim. Nephilim are mentioned three times in Chumash. This is the first one. The other two times we just read in Parshas Shlach. So the Nephilim, that's it. There's no other place in Chumash that they are mentioned. The Nephilim were in the land at that time. V'gam acharichin, and also afterwards, Ashayavo b'nehu Elohim el b'no sa'adam v'yaldu lahem, when the people of power would be involved with the daughters of man, and they would be born from them, meaning it sounds like there would be strong people born from them. Hema ha-giborim ha-shemei olam anshei Hashem. These are the strong ones that were around since the beginning of the day, of days, men of distinction. And they translate here, they were the mighty who from old were men of devastation. Okay. Vayar Hashem ki rabba ra'as ha'adam ba'aretz. Hashem saw that the evil of man was very great in the land. V'chol yetzer machshavos libo rak kol hayom. And all his thinking was always evil all day long. V'hinachem Hashem ki asas ha'adam ba'aretz. And Hashem was consoled, it says here, he reconsidered that he made man in the land, vayisatsev el libo, and he was, so to speak, sad in his heart. Vayomer Hashem emches ha'adam ha'shabarasi me'al pnei ha'adama, I will erase or wipe out the man that I created from upon the face of the earth, me'adam ad behema, from man until animal, ad remes v'adof ha'shamayim, even those things that creep, and the birds of the heaven, because all of those things are only created for man. If man is going to be wiped out, there's no point in anything else. The whole creation was only there for man. Kinichamti ki asisim, for I have regretted, that I made them. V'noach matzachim b'nei Hashem, but Noach found favor in the eyes of Hashem, and that leads to Parashas Noach. We're going to look at Parashas Noach in a moment, but let us first start here. So the Torah is describing how the world spiraled out of control. That it got worse and worse and worse, and people took advantage. The strong ones took advantage of the weak ones. There was rampant gilui arayas. There was rampant immorality going on, and Hashem says He's going to destroy the world for this reason.
Are they not people? Because it talks about when they saw the people's daughters, and that's talking about people. Yeah. So these other things were not people.
Okay, so that's what we're going to talk about. Okay, so who are these Nephilim? So the Gemara tells us that before Hashem created man, back in the beginning of Parshas Bereishis, it says, Na'ase Adam, let us make man. So who is he talking to? He was talking to the Malachim, to the angels. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sanhedrin that Hashem created a group of angels, and He said, should I create man? And they said, what is he going to do? How will he behave? So Hashem described man's behavior. And they said, Ma enosh kisiz kerenu. Why would you mention man? What good are men? So Hashem destroyed those angels. He created a second set of angels. And He said to them, should I create man? And they said, how will he behave? And He described how he'll behave. And they said, why would you want to create man? So Hashem destroyed those angels. Then He created a third set of angels. And He said, should I make man? And these angels said, Hashem, you're in charge. You know what to do. So he created man. That's what the Gemara says in Masechta Sanhedrin. It's a little funny, the third group. The question, of course, is, why did Hashem go through this exercise? Let us first establish the fact that angels do not have free will. Angels are nothing but highly sophisticated robots. They are programmed by Hashem to behave how they behave. They do not have bechira, they don't have free will. They just do what they're supposed to do. So if Hashem created a group of angels and then asked them, should I create man? And they said, why would you want to do that? That means Hashem programmed the angels to do that. And then Hashem destroyed them. That was not a punishment to the angels. That this is when Hashem is setting up something to teach us a lesson. Hashem wanted this to happen because he wanted us to learn something from this story. And that's why it's recorded in the Gemara that we can learn something from it. Same thing with the second group. And finally, the third group says, Hashem, you're in charge. Okay. Later on, remember the phrase that the angels used, the ones that were destroyed, it's a pasuk in Tehillim, they said, Ma enosh kisiz kirena. What is man that you would mention him, that you would have anything to do with him? That was the phrase they used. Later on, 2,000 years later, there is the episode of Matan Torah. We're at Har Sinai. And we're getting the Torah. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Shamayim to get the Torah. And when he came up to Shamayim to get the Torah, so then the angels said, Ma liyulud isha beinenu. What is this? Why is there someone who is born from a woman, meaning a human being, what is he doing up here? So Hashem says, I'm giving him the Torah. So they said, you're giving him the Torah. Ma enosh kisiz karenu. What is man that you would mention him, that you would remember him? The same phrase that the angels used in the beginning of time, they used here for Moshe Rabbeinu. And here you have the famous story where Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you answer them. You tell them, why is it that I'm giving the Torah to man? And the story continues, where Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, I'm afraid they're going to burn me up with the flames that come out of their mouth. So Hashem says, hold on to my kiseh hakavod, hold on to my throne, to my holy throne, and that will protect you. So Moshe Rabbeinu holds on to Hashem's throne, and he answers the angels, and the Gemara goes through several things Moshe Rabbeinu said. He said to them, the Torah says, honor your parents. Do you have parents? How can you honor parents? And the Torah says the various things of that nature, where he brings up different mitzvahs that require a body, a physical body, to perform the mitzvahs. The angels can't do any of those mitzvahs. And in the end, the angels, they say, oh, you're right, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're correct. They give him gifts, and he gets the Torah, and he comes down from Shamayim. That's the story told in Maseches Shabbos. So this story as well needs to be understood. Why does Hashem have Moshe Rabbeinu go through this exercise? Again, the angels are programmed. They were programmed to go through this, that they would challenge Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, you answer them. Moshe Rabbeinu gives his answers. And they say, oh, you're right. It seems a little bit elementary. I mean, wouldn't that be a pretty simple answer? The angels can't perform the mitzvos. The mitzvos of the Torah require a physical body to perform the mitzvahs. Some of the mitzvahs do not require a physical body. For instance, the mitzvah of belief in Hashem does not require a physical body. But the vast majority of mitzvahs require a physical body. So isn't it pretty obvious that the Torah was not written for angels? It was written for human beings. Isn't that pretty straightforward? So what is this? The angels challenge Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu gives his answer. Oh, Moshe, you're right. So what's the exchange over there? Same thing. Okay. And in both cases, the pasuk that is used is Ma enosh kisiz karenu. What is man that you would mention man? So, what is happening over here? So, you see, both from the first story, where the angels challenged Hashem in creating man in the first place, and the second story, where the angels challenge Hashem in giving the Torah to man, that there is reason to not create man. And there is reason not to give the Torah to man. the reason to create man and to give the Torah to the Jewish people outweighs the reason not to create man and not to give the Torah to the Jewish people. But there is an argument to be made. If you would set it up as a debate, should we create man or not, there would be two sides to the argument. That's what those angels represent. The angels that were destroyed, they represent the fact that there is an argument to be made, don't create man. Now, of course, Hashem created man, which means that's the better thing to do. But if you would just, in an objective manner, say, should man be created or not, you would have two sides of the argument. There is a reason to argue, no, man shouldn't be created. There's a reason to argue, yes, man should be created. Similarly, in giving the Torah, same thing. There is a reason to argue that the Torah should not be given to man, and there's a reason to argue the Torah should be given to man. And if you would debate it, you'd have a good debate going on. Of course, the side of giving the Torah to man would win, but you would have two strong arguments that would go back and forth. That's what the angels represent in these two stories. Remember that the pasuk says, "Vayera vayivoker yom hashishi," that there's an extra hey for day six, the sixth day, and that extra hey teaches us that the world was tolui va'omed, that it was dependent on the sixth day. On the sixth day of Sivan, when Hashem would give the Torah to the Jewish people, that only if the Jews would accept the Torah, then the world's creation would endure. But if the Jews would reject the Torah, God forbid, then the world would have no reason to exist anymore, and it would, the existence would go back to tohu vavohu, it would go back to nothingness, there would be no purpose in existence anymore. So the fact that in both stories you have angels arguing, don't create man, don't give the Jews the Torah, it's really a similar point, which is this whole endeavor is not worth it. Better not to have creation. Better not to have this world. Better not to have human beings. Better not to have any of that. And let's return the world back to the way it was prior to creation. Let's eliminate all of this. That's the argument the angels are making. And Hashem, of course, says, no, it's not true, that it's better that there is man and that the Torah is given to the Jewish people. So what are the two sides of the argument? Now, you can say a lot about this. There's a lot written about this. We're only going to focus on the main point, and the main point boils down to a very straightforward discussion. The straightforward discussion is the following. If you look at the end of Parashas Bereishis, in Pasuk Vav, in verse 6 on page 26, it says that Hashem reconsidered that He made man in the land, Vayis Atzev El Libo, which means, and He had heartfelt sadness. So, Kiviyachol, so to speak, Hashem was sad. So what does that mean? So Rashi tells us here it's really a mashal, but it's a story that actually happened. Rashi tells us, there was a heretic who asked Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha. Amalo, he said to him, don't you agree that Hashem knows the future? Do you Jews believe that Hashem knows the future? Amalo, he said, of course. Amalo, so he said, but doesn't the pasuk say, Hashem was sad? Why would he be sad if he knew this was going to happen anyway? So why is he sad? Amarlo, so Yeshua ben Karcha said to him, "Nola lecha ben zachar miyamecha? Did you have a boy? Did you have a baby boy in your lifetime?" Amarlo, he said, "Yes." Amarlo, he said, "Umeh asisa, what did you do?" Amarlo, samachti v'simachti asakol. I was happy and I made others happy to celebrate the birth. Amarlo, he said to him, "Lo hayisa yodei shesof olamos? Didn't you know this boy is eventually going to die? Everybody dies, so don't you know he's going to die? What are you happy about?" Amarlo, so he said to him, Bishas ched v'sa, Bishas evla, evla. And the time of happiness is happiness, time of sadness is sadness. When a child is born, it's time of happiness. Person dies, time of sadness. But you celebrate both, you deal with both. Amalo, so Rabbi Yishon Karcha said to him, Kach Maisa Kodesh Baruch Hu, that is the way of Hashem. Afal Pisha Galui Lefanav Shesofan Lachato, Ula Avdan, even though he knew that they would eventually sin and he would have to destroy them, Lo Nimna Mila Baran, he did not hold back from creating them, Bishvil Hatzadikim, Hasidim Lamod Mehem, because of the Tzadikim, the righteous that will come from them. Now this story and the mashal is actually a very difficult one, and we're not going to get into this in detail, because this we could spend all night on just on this story. But the main point of the story is that Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha is acknowledging to this heretic that the people that Hashem had to destroy, it would have been better had they not been created. It was better that the people who Hashem would eventually have to destroy, better that they would never have been created. To be created only to do averos, only to do terrible things and be destroyed, there's no point in that. But Hashem says, it's worth it. Why is it worth it? For the tzaddikim. That there can be a person or people who emerge as people who are tzaddikim, people who conquer their evil inclination, people who are able to rise above themselves and get close to Hashem, that's what makes the entire thing worth it. And even though the vast majority of man does not live up to that expectation, is unable to reach it, doesn't reach it, they fail, but it is still worth it for the tzaddikim. Similarly, when the Torah is given, the same idea. It's true that there is an argument to be made, just destroy the world. Who needs the world? The world is, there's so much evil that goes on in the world. There's so much sin that goes on in the world. A sin means a rejection of Hashem. God forbid. That people are right and left rejecting Hashem. It's a terrible, terrible thing. And for that, it would be better to destroy the entire world. But the redeeming factor is tzaddikim. That you have righteous people who embrace Hashem, who rise above their own physical limitations, and they connect to Hashem. That is the reason for creation. That's why it says Bereshis, Bara Elokim. Bereshis means on account of Reshis. Reshis means the first. Reshis refers to the Torah. Reshis refers to the Jewish people. On account of the Torah and on account of the Jewish people, it's worth it to go through creation. Even though there's a strong argument not to go through creation, but there's a strong argument to go through creation, and that is on account of the Torah and the Jewish people, the tzaddikim. That's the reason to go through the entire thing. The Torah tells us that there was something called Nephilim. Who were these Nephilim? The Medrash says, in a couple of different places, that there were two angels. They were named. That's right, Shamchazai and Azoel. And they, when man was failing, and everything was falling apart, they came to Hashem. They said, send us down to earth, and we will do better. Man is failing. We can save everybody. We can do better. These two angels, Shamchazai and Azoel. So Hashem said to them, go ahead, you can try. And they went, Shamchazai and Azoel. And when they got to this world, to be here, they had to have a physical side as well. Angels don't have a physical side. They only have a spiritual side. They only have a ruchniyistic side. They don't have a gashmias. But to be in this world, they had to be, anything in this world has to have a physical side to it. So they were given a physical side, which means they were given yetzer hara. And once they were given yetzer hara, they could not control themselves, and they did worse than everybody else. They actually brought down the world. Nephilim, no fail means to fall. They fell and they dragged the world down with them. Now again, the angels don't have free will. The angels that decided to do this, it's not that they came up with this on their own. They were programmed to do this. Hashem is teaching a lesson in this story to us. What lesson is being taught with the story of Shem Chazai and Azoel? So the lesson that is being taught is as follows. What is the argument of the angels that man is failing, we can do better? What are they arguing? Why should they be able to do better? It's true that while they're upstairs and they have no physical body, they have no Yetzer Hara, of course they're doing better because there is no challenge for them. They don't have free will. When they're down here, they're going to be given the same challenges as man. They're going to be given a physical body and a Yetzer Hara, and they will have to fight with themselves. So why should they do better than man? What do the angels have over us that they would do better? And the answer is, because the angels are coming from a place where they know Hashem, where they're fully cognizant of Hashem's existence. They're arguing as follows. Man, when man is born, does not remember Hashem at all. And in fact, a baby and a child starts with the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is stronger than the Yetzer Tov. The Yetzer Hara is there all the way from the beginning. Yetzer Hara is all the physical drives. A baby has physical drives. And as a person gets older, those physical drives get stronger. And the spiritual side of a person is only exercised later in life. So man fails. But the angels said, listen, we have a fully developed spiritual side. Put us in the world and we will be able to deal with the physical side. They were put into the world. Not only did they fail, but they failed incredibly. They failed far worse. They did far worse than regular human beings. That, if anything, they destroyed the world rather than make it any better. Why would that be? Why would it be that the angels would fail so miserably? So here you can, there's volumes you can talk about over here, but you see that when Moshe Rabbeinu said to the angels, the Torah wasn't written for you, he didn't just mean the Torah wasn't written for you in your current state of not having a body. But even if you would have bodies, you would not be able to perform the Torah. The Torah is written for human beings, people born into this world, grow up in this world. That's for whom the Torah is written. That's for whom the Torah can be successful for. The Torah is not written for angels, even angels who are then given a physical body with which to perform the mitzvos. But a physical body includes Yetzer Hara, because that's the Yetzer Hara are physical drives. They have a physical body, they have physical drives. Angels are incapable of rising above the physical side. Only man is capable. And even though man also fails, and the vast majority of men do fail, but there are men, mankind, men, women, there are people who rise above their physical side, and they are able to embrace the Torah and are able to infuse their physicality with their spirituality, and that's what makes it all worth it, and that's what makes the Torah, that is to whom the Torah is given, the Jewish people. Shem Chazai and Azoel were here, and as angels, they were also much more powerful than regular people. And when they had children, because they ended up mixing with the women, when they had children, those children were the giants. Because those angels were coming from much more power than a regular human being. And, you know, Adam HaRishon, before he sinned, was much taller, much bigger, much greater than after he sinned. It says after he sinned, that Hashem physically shrunk Adam HaRishon down. But he was a much more powerful human being before he sinned. The angels were very powerful. And when they had children, those are the Bnei Anak, those are the giants that roam the land. The Medrash says that Sichon and Og and Sichon, who Moshe Rabbeinu has to kill in Parashas Chukas, when we finally conquer parts of Ever Yarden, they are descendants of the Nephilim. They are giants that come from these Nephilim, come from Shem Chazai and Azoel. Now, this next piece I'm going to tell you only because it is so fascinating, but there's very little we're going to be able to do with it, but just to be aware, the Gemara says, the Medrash says, excuse me, that in the end, Shamchazai was able to do some level of tshuva for his averos, but Azoel was not. And the Medrash says that the Sa'ir la'Azazel, the goat that's thrown off the cliff for Azazel, Azazel means Azoel, is this angel that never did tshuva, this angel that became a human being, that never did tshuva, that it's the goat is, so to speak, for that concept. Now, this is not something which we're going to understand. Obviously, it can't be that we're worshiping that angel, God forbid. We don't worship anything but Hashem. And we're only doing this because Hashem told us to do it, to throw the goat off. But it seems that even on Yom Kippur, we have to acknowledge this story. This story of Shamchazai and Azoel has to be recognized on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, when we are acting like angels, where we do not eat, we wear white, we stand, all the things we do to be angelic, and we try to be as less physical as possible and as spiritual as possible. Only one day a year is that appropriate on Yom Kippur. That's when we try to behave in that way. It seems that even then it is critical that we recognize that angels can't do the Torah. Angels are not capable of rising above themselves if they're given physical form. Only we are. But angels are not capable of doing that. Azoel is the example of that. It seems that there's a need to recognize that on Yom Kippur, that we may be rejecting our physical side for 25 hours, or as much as possible, we're pushing it aside, but to recognize that that's not the way that man is meant to be. We are meant to have our physical sides, and we are meant to keep the Torah with our physical sides. We're not rejecting our physical sides. We are only trying to have our spiritual side be in control and the physical side be subservient. But we do not reject our physical selves. Our physical selves are critical for the service of Hashem, for keeping the Torah. It seems that that's an important lesson to bear in mind on Yom Kippur itself. Yeah.
But, you know, it says that Torah lo b'shamayim he, because...
Mm-hmm. Well, that's now, after we got the Torah.
Yeah, because the angels don't have the wherewithal to deal with the challenges in this world. And Hashem wanted the Jews to have the Torah.
Yes, but we're saying more than that. We're saying even if the angels are put in this world with a physical body, they still can't. Right.
But Hashem wanted the people who have it to work through, rise above, to meet their
potential. That's correct.
To spread the Torah.
Right.
To spread the Torah.
Yeah. And to keep it.
We know what happened to Shamchazai who did
the Shuvah. The Medrash speaks about it, but it's so strange. The whole thing is strange. It's just, but he's around somewhere. But it's just difficult. The whole thing's...
Is there a relationship, you said a couple times, Ma'anush, Kisus, Kerenum, and they came in the door, Enosh.
Yeah, that's right.
That
yeah, in
that's
the style,
why,
that's the reason.
Because
yeah.
That's why they said Ma'anush, because it was...
Yeah, but Ma'anush, Kisus, Kerenum was really was before creation.
They said it, right, but why they picked that name of all names that they could use.
That's probably the reason, because Azhu Chalik Rav Hashem Hashem. That's probably the reason. Now, what does that have to do with the Meraglim? So it has everything to do with the Meraglim. So the Meraglim, back on page 802, the Meraglim are building up their case against Eretz Yisrael. And they say that their final point is that there in Eretz Yisrael are the Nephilim and the giants who come from the Nephilim. That's where the
Nephilim... You said they Sichon and Og. They just killed the Sichon and Og. That's...
Sichon and Og have not been killed yet. That's not the Parshas Chukas. Sichon and Og are killed at the end of the 40 years.
But they're not in Eretz Yisrael, they're Eber Yarden.
Yeah.
So they didn't have to go into this.
Well, there may have been other Nephilim, other Bnei Anak. Uh-huh. Right. So they say they're in Eretz Yisrael. Why are they in Eretz Yisrael? Why is it that these, whatever this story means of these angels and these giants, why Eretz Yisrael? Why not in the Amazon? Right? Why Eretz Yisrael?
Because they don't want men. They don't want Israel to move there.
Okay, but Hashem put them there.
But that's where everything is. That's the heart. Right.
That's the heart of spirituality. Okay. That's what they were trying to get.
Okay. So Eretz Yisrael is the place where we Jews are supposed to be with the Torah in order to lead the world to its shlemus, to its completion, to its being connected to Hashem. Ultimately, the way we're supposed to do that is with the Torah, in Eretz Yisrael, with a Beis HaMikdash, with a king, with everything functioning the way it's supposed to function. That's what's supposed to happen. That's the way it's meant to be. And that's where it ultimately will happen. Being in Eretz Yisrael with the Torah is to embrace this role of those who are the ones who can use the Torah and make the Torah part of us and can be better than the angels and rise above our physical side and make our physical side subservient to our ruchnias, to our spiritual side. That takes place in Eretz Yisrael, and from there, it affects the entire world. That's what's supposed to happen. That's the ideal picture. The Jews were living in the Midbar, and they were living an abnormal existence. They were living an existence of miracles. They were living with the Mun. They were living with the Be'er, with the well of Miriam. They were living with the clouds. Nothing was normal. They were not working the land. They weren't working for a living.
What were they doing all day?
Connecting with Hashem.
The women and the men.
Everybody. Whatever it was. Torah, whatever it is. There were some tasks that had to be done. But think about a woman running a home. One of the most significant things that a woman has to deal with in running a home is food. Food was a non-issue. Laundry was not an issue. What was it?
Clothing was not an
issue. Laundry was not an issue. These things were not issues. Clean your room. These things were not issues. And the men weren't working. So what was it? Everybody was connecting to Hashem on a very high spiritual level. That's what they were doing. We were now about to enter Eretz Yisrael. Entering Eretz Yisrael means to dispel, to remove all of these miraculous things, and then begin normal life. Normal life means working the fields, working the house, working the children, all the things of normal life, and connecting to Hashem through all of that. That was a very daunting thing to think about. Meaning, to do what the Nephilim couldn't do. That's what the Jews had to do in Eretz Yisrael. This is what the Meraglim were, I don't want to say the word afraid of, this is what they didn't want. This is what was driving them away. They did not want to go into Eretz Yisrael and have to change their existence. Because it wasn't a question of convenience. It was a question of confidence. Could we do it? Could we really rise above ourselves and make ourselves the people, those tzaddikim, for which the world was created in the first place? Even though everybody else is failing. But that's why this world was created. And the angels themselves have failed. Could we do this?
They had to prove that they were better than the Nephilim.
That's right. And the Meraglim believed they couldn't be better than the Nephilim. They believed that if they would go into Eretz Yisrael, and they would be given a physical side, which means they would now have to deal with their physical selves in ways that they haven't had to do since they left Mitzrayim. No mun, no be'er, no clouds. Go into regular life, they will fail like the Nephilim failed. they were afraid of the Nephilim. Not that they were afraid the Nephilim would kill them. They were afraid, we will become the Nephilim. We are going to be like them. And that's what terrified them. And that was their argument to the Jewish people. We can't do this. Look at the Nephilim. Look what happened to them when they went in. Look what happened to them. They destroyed themselves and everything else around them. What's going to happen to us? You think we're better than they are? You think we can handle what they can't, what they couldn't handle? Moshe Rabbeinu said to the angels, no, we can handle it. You can't. The Torah is for us. It's not for you. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's response. They were rejecting that response. They were afraid of this way of life. The way of life that we deal with all the time, they were afraid of failure in that way. And that's what was driving them away from Eretz Yisrael. The Nephilim are there in Eretz Yisrael because that is the place where you're supposed to be able to rise above yourself. This is the place. Eretz Yisrael is the place that is most most appropriate, most conducive and powerful for the job of the Jew. And yet the Nephilim failed in Eretz Yisrael. What hope do we have? This was their argument. When they said that the nation is stronger than we are, ki chazaku mimenu, it's stronger than we are, which also means it's stronger than he is. Stronger than we are means we can't do what we're supposed to do. They couldn't do it, we can't do it. We can't possibly do this. We'll fight them in a battle of war. We might win the war and lose ourselves in the process. We might win physically. We might beat them in a war. But then we'll lose ourselves. We will no longer be that Am Segula, that special nation of Hashem. We'll just become like them. We'll become like they are. We can't possibly. So when they said Hashem can't remove them from the land, it's not they weren't arguing that Hashem is too weak to remove them from the land. What they're arguing is the plan can't work. What's Hashem trying to do? Remove them and put us in there. We're going to be them anyway. That's not removing them. That's replacing them with them. So we'll become them. So that there's no accomplishment in that. They're saying that there's nothing, there's no gain over here. Hashem's not replacing them with us. We are going to become them. And therefore, there's no way. It can't work. Hashem's plan is flawed inherently. Look at the Nephilim. Look what happened to them. This is the thrust of the argument of the Meraglim. Of course, Kalev and Yehoshua are saying, nothing doing. Of course we're going to be successful. And Hashem says we're going to be successful, we're going to be successful. It's all couched in terms of war and fighting and battles. But it's not just the physical battle, it's the internal battle that's being expressed over here. And the Meraglim are saying, we can't win the internal battle. And Kalev and Yehoshua are saying, yes, we can win the internal battle. And Moshe and Aaron are saying, yes, we can win the internal battle. And here, they clash. The Meraglim's story and the Meraglim's argument resonates with the Jewish people. They are afraid, and that leads to their crying that night and the fact that they then have to wander. And of course, we're gonna trace this through, but ultimately, when this generation is gonna be replaced by the next generation, the point of the next generation is gonna have to be that they're gonna have the confidence that they're going to be able to be successful, which will be the next step in the process.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.